psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, the voice you trust for the family you love.
Well, my relationship with Shirley has been one of the highlights of my life. Something precious happened in those childhood years, and I can't recover one of them.
Well, what do you think we were doing at home?
You can be sure we were on our knees.
This is Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Well, Dr. Dobson and Ryan, all of our guests who come into our studios become new friends, but the folks we'll hear from today are actually very old friends.
They really are, and it was also the first big group we've had here today. And our tiny little temporary studio wouldn't even come close to fitting everybody, so we actually went to my office and set up a table and a bunch of chairs and mics and things like that. There's actually a photo of that online at myfamilytalk.com.
And you'll see how crowded we were in that little studio. But it worked. We do need a new studio, however, and one of these days we're going to figure out how to pay for it. Maybe there's someone out there who could help us do that. But I am so pleased to be able to present a recording of an interview today that we prepared a couple of weeks ago, because it will touch the hearts of our listeners, I believe. It features four people in one family, three of whom are physicians and surgeons. All of them have a passion for Africa and for the needy people there who have little or no medical care available to them. These guests have returned recently from Tenwick Hospital in Kenya, working long hours and bringing a healing touch to those who might be called, in Jesus' words, the least of these our brothers. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to hear today and tomorrow from Dr. Roy Stringfellow, who is an OBGYN in private practice here in Colorado Springs, and his wife, Carolyn. The two of them just returned recently from 3 weeks at Tenwick Hospital in Kenya. I think that'll be clear as we go along. By the way, Luann, I think Carolyn was a flight attendant with United Airlines for 36 years.
Well, yeah, and there's a sidebar there, Doctor. She actually was stranded in Frankfurt, Germany during 9/11, and interesting story. We don't have time for it here, but we're going to put that on myfamilytalk.com. People will want to listen to
that. Well, I know that story, and it is worth listening to. The Stringfellow's daughter, Dr. Caroline Hedges, graduated from medical school 2 years ago and will be starting a residency in OBGYN this fall. These are impressive people. By the way, Caroline is carrying her second baby, and her little daughter, Clara, is, I think, 16 months old now. So how they get all this done, I don't know. Dr. Jeremy Hedges, who's married to Caroline, is in his fifth year of a residency in general surgery. And by the way, they just both completed master's degrees in public health at Harvard University. These folks could use their talent and training in a thousand different settings with obvious financial implications. You know, lucrative salaries would be available. But God has called them to work in the bush country of Africa, where the pay is minimal and the equipment is less than ideal, and the medical support systems are often makeshift. But they've spent 10 months in Africa out of the last year, and we tip our hat to them for doing so. I admire these folks more than I can say, and I think our listeners will understand why this is true as the interview unfolds.
Well, when you meet any of these four new friends, you're instantly drawn into them, Dr. Dobson. I know I was. Their warmth and their hearts. Let's get to that conversation right now. We're going to pick it up when you asked Caroline and Jeremy to tell about the special work that the Lord had called them to.
I would like you all to describe that trip to Tenwick Hospital, which is in Kenya. And there is not much else available in the area you were for any kind of medical care, is there?
It's a pretty basic area. The community that Tenwick is in is a very poor farming community. In that region, most people live on less than a dollar a day, don't have running water.
Dollar a day.
Live in mud huts with thatched roofs. Mm-hmm. Actually, a billion people in the world globally live on less than a dollar a day. Almost half of Africa.
So you saw patients with advanced diseases and conditions that had not been treated at all. Is that right, Jeremy?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I spent a lot of time working with esophageal cancer patients doing endoscopy for them, and they would literally come in when they could not swallow their own saliva anymore. So their swallowing tube had completely closed, which you just don't hear of here in the States.
Jeremy, Dr. Stringfellow, your father-in-law, told me about some of the very early cases that you had when you got to Tenwick Hospital, and it kind of is illustrative of what medicine is like in that part of the world. Describe the individuals that you saw either on that first night or very shortly thereafter.
Yeah, well, I'll always remember that first night on call there, and it started with a man who'd been shot with an arrow by a Maasai warrior, and he had...
In the stomach?
Yeah, it was in the stomach, and he had been transported down a rural, bumpy road for several hours, bouncing around and caused a lot of damage inside, but we
were able to... You have to do a resection of the intestine and bowel?
He was fortunate, so we just repaired all the holes in the bowel, but there was 11 of them all together.
Oh my goodness.
So it took some time. And there was also a man that was gored by a Cape buffalo, and he had been found down with his cattle out in the field, and they actually don't know how long he had been there, most of the day perhaps. He came in at night, so he'd been transported a long ways as well, and just multiple injuries. And in fact, his femur was broken in the mid-shaft area, and he was in very bad shape.
And how long did you work on him that night?
Well, just for a few hours. We got him stabilized and then fixed his leg and then took him to the ICU. But he actually went home a few weeks after.
And both of those men survived?
Yes, they both did.
Yeah.
And if they'd been in an area where they couldn't get it to a hospital, they most certainly would have died. So.
Yeah. And now you were mostly operating in obstetrics cases, a lot of C-sections and things of that nature.
C-sections coming out my ears.
In fact, Roy, you went down and spent 3 weeks there, you and Carolyn.
Right, we did. We had a wonderful 3 weeks, and it was so great to work with my daughter here. That was really fun. And she was coming right out of medical school, so she'd had no real formal OBGYN training. And I was concerned, what it would be like for her. But by the time she'd been there 6 months, when we finally arrived, it was like a residency on steroids for her. She was doing her own C-sections, doing exploratory surgeries, seeing patients in the emergency room, and very, very capable. So it was fun for me. I just got to kind of hold retractors and assist and watch her operate. It was great. She did a wonderful job. The day that sticks in my memory, I'll let Caroline tell you some of the details, was Christmas Eve. And we were on call together, and we started about 7:30 in the morning. And between 7:30 that morning and 11:30 that evening, we delivered 9 babies by way of 8 C-sections, one set of twins. And all but one of the babies survived. The one that didn't survive, sadly, was too premature to make it. But in that environment, had there not been the availability of Tenwick Hospital, all of those babies would have died. None of them would have made it.
And
some of the mothers would have died, right.
Not having, the residency training that the work that you were doing in Tenwick really required, how did you cope with that? All of a sudden, you're doing surgery that you hadn't really been specifically trained for, right?
Right. I prayed a lot, and I read a lot. I just coming out of medical school, you have quite a bit of theoretical knowledge and skills, but I didn't have a lot of operative skills. And when we got there, my boss, my attending, did a few C-sections with me, and then I was pretty much on my own because there's such huge need and so few people to do the work. So my first C-section was actually one of those really wild and crazy emergencies. We had a lady come in from home. She'd been delivering at home, and the baby was coming out foot first, breech. Yeah. And I was the most senior person on the service, actually, that day, because my boss was out of town. And so we had to do an emergency C-section and a classical C-section.
Yeah.
But this baby was wedged in such a way that I decided that was the only way I could get this baby out. And I'd never seen one. But I'd read about it, so I actually did my first C-section as classical and had to figure it out and called
my
dad that
night.
Mom did, and baby did. And actually, this was the first baby that I'd seen breech that had come in that survived.
Caroline, you must have learned an awful lot there.
Oh, I mean, that's amazing.
That's going to help you in your residency, isn't
it? I hope so. I didn't learn how to manage anything normal. Because actually the nurse midwives do all the deliveries and normal things, and so they do a great job of triaging everything normal, and then they just call the docs for the complicated stuff.
Yeah, Caroline had the advantage of having an attending who was an OBGYN, and then there was a resident there who was just outstanding, and they really helped her and kind of brought her along, and by the time I arrived, man, she was going. She had learned a lot. So it was very interesting to work with Caroline and see that.
Jeremy, did you also have that kind of support? Of course, you'd finished 3 years of general surgery by that point. Did you feel ready for the things that you found yourself handling?
Well, I think you can never really feel ready in those circumstances. But being in that environment, you're just really stretched in new ways. So there's no specialist at the hospital. So not only are you covering general surgery, but you have to cover anything surgical that comes in, whether it's neurosurgical or pediatric or orthopedic. So all those things. And at first, that was really challenging and at times a bit nerve-wracking just because of the
long hours again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
What did you tackle with neurosurgery? I mean, I'm still kind of blown away. You know, I keep hearing all the different stories, but, you know, everything surgical, what was that all about?
Well, mostly these are just basic life-saving surgeries, so not resecting brain tumors or anything like that, but there's a lot of trauma in that area from motorcycles and car accidents, so simple things like elevating a depressed skull fracture will save someone's life, and so just basic neurosurgical procedures like that.
I'm not sure basic and neurosurgery really go together. I hear you say that, and you say it confidently, and so I believe you, but I don't think I'd ever encounter basic neurosurgery.
Yeah, I think to really understand this, we need to go back to the beginning of Tenwick Hospital. It goes back to a doctor named Dr. Ernie Sturey, who is the man that started this. And back in the 1960s, when he was a youth, he became a Christian and then felt led to go to the mission field. And after college and medical school, he did 1 year of internship in Panama in infectious disease. And then his mission organization sent him directly to Kenya. Dr. Sturey arrived with zero surgical training and essentially straight out of medical school as far as any surgical training was concerned. But he just had to do it. If you didn't, you watch people die of appendicitis. You watch people hemorrhage to death. You watch babies die because they couldn't be delivered by cesarean section. So for the first 2 years, he essentially did his surgery by administering the anesthetic himself, and then someone would hold a book, and he would do the surgery. And over the years, he became one of the most skilled surgeons probably this planet's ever known. He was recognized by other doctors for his skills, and he was an amazing gentleman. And he's kind of my hero, and his average day would mean getting up at daybreak, making rounds on these people, and then he would see 80 to 100 clinic patients in the day, and then he would operate well into the night and stagger home, get something to eat. Before the night was over, usually there'd be an emergency, a child may have fallen into the fire, or somebody got speared, or somebody got bitten by a cobra, and he'd be back up at the hospital. He did this 24/7, 365 days a year for 20 years. I couldn't do it for 20 days.
Oh, goodness.
And he was not only a wonderful physician, but a great administrator. The hospital grew. It's now about a 300-bed hospital. It's got multiple surgical specialties and so forth, and it's just amazing. But the greatest impact I think he had was a spiritual impact, because he prayed with every patient, and if a patient didn't know Jesus Christ, he would talk to him about that. And it was fascinating for us to arrive and find the whole area, that community was essentially a Christian community now, which was remarkable.
Roy, you kind of have the beginnings of a call from the Lord, too, don't you, to go to a mission field. You're very tender about the story you just told. This comes right from your heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does, and it does my heart good to see these two young people that are really dedicated to this and are willing to do it. Our 3 weeks at 10-week left me with a profound respect for people that really dedicate their lives to that. Even going for a year is one thing, but people that do it continually and are there, they give up what you would have here in the United States for a totally different lifestyle. It's pretty amazing. They're wonderful people.
Carolyn, it's your time now to tell us about the trip to Kenya and what your experience is like. You got pulled into many of the medical things going on at 10-week, didn't you?
I observed mostly at 10-week. I ended up being a stay-at-home grandma during the time, and being a house helper, helping the house helper learn how to cook. And when you live in a mud hut, you don't understand cleaning, like dusting baseboards and bookcases. And Jacqueline was a very sweet lady, and I could tell usually when she really understood something I was teaching her, because she would get this big smile and just say, "Oh, thank you, Jesus, because I didn't know that."
Is that right? How old was she?
Jacqueline is 26 and has four children, the oldest being 8, and a very sweet lady. She'd run to work every day. It took her about an hour, run home from work.
How far from the hospital were you?
Fortunately, about a minute and a half.
So you could come home if you weren't involved in surgery,
yes,
right?
That was one of my favorite parts, actually, of this year. It was very easy to blend my family life and my work life. And just the African culture, too. Kids are welcome everywhere. So it was a really neat, supportive environment. And when I had, 20 minutes while they're getting ready for the next C-section, I'd run down to see Clara, and we could have lunch together as a family every day. And so that was a really neat part of it.
Roy, how about the finances of the hospital? How are they provided for?
Well, it's Samaritan's Purse sponsors the hospital, and they do a wonderful job. I'm telling you, they're outstanding. They worked hard. They tried hard. They knocked themselves out. They've even got a nursing training program there, so that's good. But just the basic personnel is very hard. When you write doctor's orders, Jeremy, what'd you call that? Doctor's request, not doctor's orders.
Yeah, doctor's suggestions.
Doctor's suggestions. And when you would make rounds in the morning, a lot of these people required antibiotic therapy and other intravenous medicines, and often you would find the IV had run out maybe hours ago. They may have received one dose instead of three and so forth. And it's not because the nurses are lazy or don't care. They're just strapped. And that's a big problem. That hospital could really utilize some better funding.
Did you have clean, sterile needles and swabs and things?
Well, it's interesting that the needles and things that you worry about sticking yourself with or cutting yourself, that was pretty sterile. But just the environment was not very clean. And coming back to the hospital where I work here in Colorado Springs and seeing the good lighting and the sterile environment and all the equipment I could possibly hope to have, and compare that to where I just came from, is just mind-boggling, the difference.
Could I come back to the finance issues of the hospital?
Please do.
Just briefly. It's one of the big challenges at 10-week and probably across Africa and other developing countries. Tenwick just charges a nominal fee for their services, and really a lot less than the private hospitals in the country. And it's really just enough to cover their overhead and pay the staff, you know, a small salary and,
yes.
and some of the expenses for disposable goods and things like that. So it's not much, but even that, you just see day in and day out, it stretches the poor to their limits and sometimes actually just pushes them further into poverty. It's one of the saddest things I think we saw, and, you know, there's no easy solution to that at all. And just a couple stories that come to my mind, just patients that you'll never forget. So there was a small boy, Chepkowicz, who came to us with ruptured appendicitis, and we operated on him, and he recovered and went home. And I saw him in clinic a few weeks later, and just was talking to him and his mother and getting more of the story. And come to find out, they had to sell their only cow to pay part of their hospital bill so he could go home. And in that area of Africa, that, you know, the cow is your livelihood, provides milk for the family. You can sell milk to make money. And so you can really see the cost to these families of getting this kind of health care. They were also looking to sell their the land that they lived on, their only piece of property, to settle the remaining part of the bill. So really sad part, and there's no easy way around that. There's another story that I'm thinking of as well. There was a night that a small child, I think about 15 months old, had come in, swallowed a razor blade, or part of a razor blade.
Swallowed it.
Mm-hmm. And it was stuck in there. We could see it on the X-ray, and so we took the child to the endoscopy suite. We're able with a scope to pull out the razor blade, and Caroline was up there that night. I'm not sure. She was passing it through or checking on me or something, but I remember we were walking out of the theater together, and the child was in front of us with the mom, and we looked down, and the mom didn't have any shoes on, and just
clothed in rags, and you could see they were just poverty-stricken.
Yeah, it just, you know, struck us that there's no way she can pay for this simple thing that we've just done, and it's people like that you'll never forget.
Oh, Luann and Dad, what an impressive family this is. We've been listening to an interview with Dr. and Mrs. Roy Stringfellow. He's an obstetrician and gynecologist with their daughter, Caroline Hedges, who is also a physician, and her husband is Dr. Jeremy Hedges, who we just heard there. He is a fifth-year resident in general surgery. The great passion of these folks is for people in Africa who have little or no access to medical care, even though they are in desperate need of it. The Hedges plan to spend a significant portion of their lives as medical missionaries in Kenya and other parts of Africa. And we have been hearing about the 10 months they recently spent at the Tenwick Hospital there in Kenya.
You know, as remarkable as their experience has been, what I appreciate most from what we've heard is the tenderness and the compassion that these doctors reveal mm-hmm. for very, very poor people who can never, never repay them for the care that mm-hmm. they've been given. We heard that from Dr. Hedges there in the last comment. It is indeed a labor of love done in the name of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Luann, your father was a medical missionary
yes.
as well. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he served for several weeks at Tenwick Hospital.
It was fascinating. My father is a retired orthopedic surgeon and has spent his retirement years, like you, not retiring, but still wanting to minister in Jesus' name, as you said, in the medical community. So yes, he actually went to this very same hospital for a short-term mission trip a while ago.
This interview that we participated in and are now hearing must have had a real significance for you. You were kind of reliving part of your childhood.
Oh, I identified with all of it. And I think later on in the conversation, we'll even hear more about the importance of taking your family on a missions trip. I lived there for 5 years in South Africa, not in Kenya where they were, but exactly what they're describing. And it does put that deep seed of compassion in your heart when you see the conditions outside of the United States.
Well, our time is gone. We've heard the first half of this interview mm-hmm. with the Stringfellows and the Hedges, and Tell us about tomorrow.
Tomorrow we will hear the remainder of it, talking a lot more about the conditions, why they are there, some fascinating stories about the women in general that Caroline and her father were ministering to. If you can't be with us, know you can listen online, myfamilytalk.com.
Ryan, did the latter part of that interview grab your heart? Did you feel a sense of compassion for this woman who didn't even have mm-hmm. shoes?
You can really tell by Jeremy's tone and by knowing the two of them and Dr. Stringfellow. You can see it in their faces during the interview where they wish they can do more. Mm. You know, here they did, leave their residency program, leave their families, take a five-month-old infant into Africa, and yet still they're trying to figure out what else can they do for these people.
Man, the tears in their eyes was not reflected in their voices sometimes. Mm-hmm. These are surgeons. These are mm-hmm. scientists, you know, and they don't show their emotions, but it was very there.
Absolutely.
It was very real.
It really was.
It got a hold of me, too.
Well, I know there is someone out there listening right now who shares these feelings. And at myfamilytalk.com, Ryan, we have a fabulous list of ideas for people who are touched like we were and who perhaps have been touched like the Stringfellows and Hedges and want to do something. They've been motivated to do something. That whole list of ideas is available at myfamilytalk.com.
That's right. So if that is you, if you've got an ability, and they said they take everybody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not just certain people. They want everyone to come over. Or if you know somebody that's looking to volunteer, please come to the website, myfamilytalk.com.